This Fan Run podcast is brought to you by Manscaped. Hey folks, it's Jake Miller from The Drive, and Manscaped is the best in men's below-the-waist grooming. Manscaped offers precision-engineered tools for your family jewels. Manscaped's Performance Package, the ultimate men's hygiene bundle. Join over 4 million men worldwide who trust Manscaped with this exclusive offer for you. 20% off and free worldwide shipping with the code 20DRIVE. That's 20DRIVE at manscaped.com. And if my math is correct, that's about 8 million balls.
It's time for The Drive's Top 4 at 4.
All right, here we go. Hour number two of The Drive underway in the Top 4 at 4, brought to you this afternoon by Bo Kregner and the Kregner Group. They do real estate the right way. Here's Jake Miller.
Thank you, Russell. Up first, Tennessee gets set to take on Belmont in 2 hours on the SEC Network Plus. Might not be a stroll in the park for the Vols tonight.
That's what they're saying.
Have we not played them this year?
I don't think so.
I know we played
Bellarmine.
Twice. But I could have sworn we had already played Belmont.
I feel like we did too.
Oh, I know what that was. That was the game that got shortened because of rain.
But they were, they played us. No.
Which game got shortened because of rain?
I thought it was Tennessee Tech. Because that's why we played the wooden bat game.
Played Butler. That's one you might get confused. Lipscomb.
Maybe it is.
Tennessee Tech. Yeah, I think this is the only time we played them.
Huh.
Bruins coming here looking to pull the upset. And have your game face on tonight, boys. Xander Seacrest, big moment for him.
I mean, you heard Logan. What are they in the RPI? I mean, they're borderline at-large team for the postseason, right?
Yeah.
I mean, they're playing to get into the tournament.
Make it nasty over there at Lindsey Nelson.
That's going to be a gorgeous night over there.
Number two, Tennessee adds a commit in the form of Toby Awaka, power forward, stands 6'8", weighs 240. Could reclass to play next year since he did the hold behind program.
No, he is going to play next year.
He is going to play next year. That's confirmed.
This is a guy for next year. And
he's also not coming in here when he should be playing his senior year of high school.
Yeah, you're the last caller. It was he'd been held back. And then he reclassed, so it's not like he's 16 years old trying to come in and play college basketball.
Yeah.
So hopefully this works out. I mean, it's not like you need him to come in here and play 30 minutes a game, but hopefully he can come in and develop. You got Robinson Kamwa, you got Urosh, obviously, and then Jonas Adu are going to be your guys, and I think we're going to play a lot of small ball. You can see a lot of Josiah Jordan James at the four. And hopefully this guy, if he comes in 3 minutes here, 4 minutes there, guy gets in foul trouble, maybe plays 10 minutes. Like, that's what you want.
Yeah. And I think with the type of, you know, his experience that he's had just being in New York City, he's not as likely to be intimidated getting stuck in the middle of an SEC dogfight kind of game.
Don't sound like it.
Number three, California state legislators proposed a bill that would require schools in the state to split 50% of its athletic revenue in football and both men's and women's basketball with its athletes. The bill is titled the College Athlete Race and Gender Equity Act.
And what is this now?
Basically, they're trying to say that 50% of the athletic revenue in the universities in California will be split to the athletes. Like, the money will go directly to the athletes.
Per school, so like all the money UCLA makes, 50% of it is divvied up evenly among all athletes. Like, I have so many questions. Like, do the walk-ons or the volleyball team, are they getting their share? Is this collectively all the money at California public institutions?
Like Cal State Poly.
San Jose, are they getting their?
SC's a private school, right?
I think so, but
they aren't in the system, so they wouldn't have to. I don't know, man.
That's a weird one.
That's really wild if that's really at face value what they're trying to do.
Well, I mean, I'm hearing there was an article about Saban talking about I mean, he made it sound like they were going to pool all the NIL money that all his football players get and then divide it up equally amongst all the players on that team. You had Herb Street this week talking about he can see a day where the players are going to be cut in on the TV contracts coming soon. There's just so many changes coming in college athletics. I don't know where any of this is going to end up, but it does sound like leaning more and more towards more of the revenue going to the players, which...
Well, there's I would imagine there's going to be a union sooner rather than later.
I mean, you have to, aren't you?
For football especially.
Yeah. In these sports.
Well, I mean, the train's already rolling, and it's kind of hard to stop a train. And that train started rolling last year.
When somebody NIL smart first that thing. Could figure out how to get the ball rolling on that. Some big-time lawyer. Head up to college football players union.
Northwestern players tried to do it a couple of years ago, and it was shot down by the National Labor Board or something like that. But, I mean, if you're a professional, you've got players unions in all the big major sports in this country. I can't imagine that college athletics would be the big thing is like the Title IX. It's like what do you do with women's sports, non-revenue sports? Like, that's where I think you're going to have a big legal fight on your hands.
Well, I think that at that point they'll just split it. That's when I think that's probably when you'll see the split. Because you're exactly right. I mean, we're just watching a lot of lawsuits. I have a feeling for the next 5 to 10 years. Watch it all play out in court.
That'd be fun. Number four, New York Yankees left-hander Nestor Cortes said he deactivated his Twitter account after screenshots surfaced Sunday of tweets from a decade ago that included racial slurs. Cortes appeared to be quoting rap lyrics in at least some of the tweets. He did not seem to be using the words to demean anyone directly.
What are we doing?
This is really important. Must be a slow news day. No offense, Jake, but...
He was 17.
Yeah.
I mean, if you guys want to talk about golf and other stuff that's going on.
I think we need to cancel this young man. I mean, 10 years ago, yeah, let's string him up publicly. Let's flog him. Let's make him apologize on Oprah, national television. I want the tearful just sobbing. I didn't mean it.
But again, it does make me thank God that we didn't have social media.
No, right?
Imagine 70s, 80s social media.
Oh, man. So bad.
Like Sam Kennison live on Twitter.
Well, I mean, just like any leader now, like in national politics, who's like 50 or older, if you had access to their thoughts, they're goofing around with their buddies' thoughts in like the 1970s. Like, none of these guys or women would be able to serve publicly.
No.
I don't know. Maybe it's a good thing. Maybe because of that, maybe that is a good thing because so many people be canceled that the only people that can get into public service are people that were like so goody two shoes and like actual like
paid attention in class.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. The nerds. Yeah. Going to school.
Dork.
Doing what they're supposed to be doing. Those are the people I want running things.
Yeah.
These idiots like
me and you.
Yeah.
Exactly.
You don't need to be having power.
I mean, I don't know. I watched one of the Chappelle shows last night and this whole bit on cancel culture was really good. And he's telling the truth, man.
Take your word for it. That is the top four at four. Brought to you by Bo Kregner and the Kregner Group. They do real estate the right way. Yes, they do. Helped a lot of people, including a lot of our audience, rake in Buco bucks, fat stacks, yo, to quote Jesse from Breaking Bad. I was watching some Breaking Bad clips on YouTube last night. Mad stacks, mad Benjamins, yo. That's what they've been making when you call Bo Kregner and the Kregner Group. He gets you paid. How do you get top dollar out of your house in this market? With a top realtor, that's how. That's Bo Kregner and the Kregner Group. It all starts with a free phone call. Tell them I sent you. 865-742-1035, 742-1035. online at BoKnowsHouses.com. That's Bo Kregner at the Kregner Group. Real estate the right way. Coming up, we got Blake Topmeyer from the New Sentinel set to join here later on this hour. We'll talk college football with him. In the meantime, you want to jump on, take a shot now, 865-546-8200. Phil is next. Good afternoon, Phil.
Morning, sir. I'm here.
What's up, Philly?
How you, Bird, Jake, and Marcus doing?
Doing well, doing well. Thanks.
It's good to see that Marcus is improving on the basketball predictions.
Did he have a bad prediction?
No, he picked him 10th, and he was the only one on the panel right.
He was. He won that particular game of the Price is Right.
Huh. Well, it was a good pickup today.
You like it?
Yeah. Anybody's a post player I like. I mean,
have you watched any of his film yet?
Yeah, I watched it, and then he can rebound. That's what they need, somebody that's an elite rebounder, and that's what they need over there.
Yeah, like he went up. Remember how Admiral used to go up and attack the basketball? Like he didn't go up, you know, halfway on it. You hear that smack, two hands. That's I saw this kid do that a bunch.
Yeah, and he'll get stronger in their weight and conditioning program.
He's pretty good size right now.
Yeah, he is, but
he doesn't have a whole lot of baby fat on him.
He's been well coached. He can go to the left, he can go to the right. He's got good footwork. He just needs, you know, get competition down here and get ready. I mean, I think he'll play some. I don't know how much he'll play, but you look at Tennessee inside, that's the weakest portion of their team.
You think he's a whole lot more ready to step right in and be able to handle the physicality of the SEC versus some of the other kids we've had in?
I don't know. But he's from New York, and they all have a chip on their shoulder, and have played good competition. And they've all been well coached, too, a lot of them are. And I think that helps a lot when you get well coached in high school. It translates being ready to play in college.
Mm. You guys are selling me.
Did we ever figure out if that's – did those – it was him and Zakai. Is that the same high school that Jamal –
Yeah, no, same AAU.
Is Mashburn?
Zakai has a 6'4 brother who's been offered by Nebraska. He's next – the 23 class. Tennessee ought to be looking at him too.
No, wait, another Ziegler. A
6'4
Ziegler.
All righty.
6'4", Z's got him in brother.
Okay.
I can't think of his first name, but
I mean, I can think of a lot of worse things, Phil, than Tennessee developing a pipeline to straight into New York City, especially these kids playing in the AAU program they're coming out of and then just growing up playing on the playgrounds up there.
Well, Russell was talking earlier about Junior Phillips. His ability to take the ball to the rack and get a shot at the rim is something Tennessee don't have. And if they get this DJ Williams, he can do the same thing. And BJ is also good at taking the ball to the hole. That's something Tennessee hadn't had outside of Kenny Chandler or somebody can take it to the hole in the last few years.
I think Rick Barnes learned a lesson between 2021 and this year where just could never settle on a point guard in that the Springer Johnson year, and then this year where they had just all kinds of different options. It's like, give me dudes that can handle the ball and shoot it over length and athleticism. Yeah, if you get a guy like Phillips, you can put him in there and work him in, but you never have – it's like pitchers in baseball, man. You never have enough dudes who can handle the ball on your basketball team.
Yeah, and basketball is a positionless game now, and you got to get guys who can guard to three or four positions when they switch their defenses.
Well, yeah, and everybody's got to be able to score. I mean, you can't have – you might be able to get away with an Urosh if – the other four guys can all score it, but you can't have two guys out there that just can't score. You're so easy to guard like that. And it sounds like a lot of these guys, the guard position especially, we're going to have a couple of shooters, guys who can handle, and like you're saying, put the ball on the floor, get to the hoop.
It'll be interesting to see if Tennessee goes after, tries to get another guard or not to fill out the class or just hold the scholarship for next year or wait for a transfer or something. Maybe they could do that. But I think the point guard will be fine. You got Ziegler, you got B.J. Edwards, and Key can play point because he played point at Indiana State. So I don't see how that – there's not going to be a big drop off at the point guard position like everybody thinks there is.
No, it might be kind of a committee-type deal, but that's fine. I mean, I like the options that you just
– I mean, he could send them in waves, you know. Everybody's going to have should have fresh legs, and if anybody, you know, because what game was it where that really burnt Arkansas in Fayetteville when they called all those fouls on Kennedy and was it Santee? And it completely changed.
Yeah, they sure did. Got them out of the game, didn't
Yeah, and they sat on the bench for like 20 minutes. So never have too many point guards, but I'm looking forward to it, man. I'm starting to get fired up for basketball.
The Duke kid is probably the biggest question mark on the team, and he probably has the most he's got a lot of talent.
Yep.
If they can channel him into being a legitimate five-man next year, Tennessee's going to be held on wheels.
I mean, like I said earlier, Phil, I feel like with this coach, you're always going to have a good roster, and I feel like it's – team's always going to be well put together, and at this point we're just wondering, like, can he take that final step and
yeah,
have a good run in March, and we'll see. And I'll pull him for him.
Yeah, and they've already got the recruiting for next year. Just about they're going to have two or three commits, I'd say, in the next 2-3 months for 23. So Rick Barnes probably ain't recruiting. I mean, Danny and Clark have helped him out a lot too.
Yep.
Yeah, our friend of the show, Coach Gainey. Our guy, he's been putting in the work, hasn't he, Russ?
Well, he's...
you might want to get him on later on in the summer and see what's going on.
Yeah, we'll do that. We'll get Coach on here in maybe in the next week or so and just kind of pick his brain. But, yeah, I mean, he's been... You talk about a guy who's been at Arizona and Marquette and a couple of other places, Tennessee now, and he's just got contacts everywhere, and... I think he's settled in nicely here. And, you know, we're going to be lucky if we have him 2 years here. I mean, he might be a head coach this time next year or so. Got to keep that assistant coach pipeline going too.
I keep wondering if he's going
to
be
there. You say Rick Barnes is very similar to John Majors. Rick Barnes turns out head coaches just like John Majors did. See you.
Thank you, Phil.
Majors wasn't afraid to bring in talented assistant coaches. So, I don't know. I mean, I could see Gainey being the next
NC State.
Yep.
Yeah, I mean, maybe.
And to confirm, Jamal Mashburn did go to the same high school as Tommy Iwaka.
And that's where Zakai and his parent, I guess his brother goes.
I'll
have to go back and watch
hoop.
the video now of Iwaka and take a look at Zakai's brother. Wonder what his name is.
Stay with us. The Drive continues coming up. Visit with our buddy Blake Topmeyer at USA Today, your Knoxville News Sentinel. That's coming up next. Stay tuned. Fan Run Radio. Back with more after this. Fan Run Radio, 105.7 FM, 1340 AM, streaming live this afternoon at fanrunradio.com and the free Fan Run app. A variety of ways for you to experience the program this afternoon as we welcome in Blake Topmeyer to the festivities today. He, of course, of your USA Today, Knoxville News Sentinel. Good afternoon, Blake. How are you, sir?
The festivities. That makes it sound like you guys are having a good time.
It's very festive. Yes, we have our music going. We're sitting around with friends and just having a good time, enjoying each other's company, talking sports as men do oftentimes. Blake, how are you, sir?
Hey, I like the sound of that. Yeah, that's good. I'm doing well. You know, we got the SEC spring meetings coming up here in a couple weeks. One of my favorite events of the year, and I'd like to say that's because of the reporting opportunities, and there are good reporting opportunities there, but it's in Destin, Florida, and I love that. So, yeah, looking forward to that coming up here in about a week and a half.
That's just nice, man. You get those guys in a little bit – more of a relaxed environment, and every now and then you get a good quote. I mean, Spurrier was always Spurrier was gold anywhere, but particularly like down there. I think that's where he said you can't spell citrus without UT and all that kind of stuff. Like you get some good quotes there, and there's not 2,000 media people there like at SEC Media Days. It's only the truly dedicated guys like you, Blake, down there.
Yeah, that's right. At least that's what I tell myself anyway, right? But no, truly, it is kind of a special event because I don't want to say it's invite only, but it is. You know, SEC Media Days has gotten to the point where it's like, you know, if you just create a Blogspot website and you're firing off posts, which, hey, more power to you. You might have something more relevant to say than I do, but B, you're probably going to get credentialed to SEC Media Days. Like Media Days in July, you know, it's become this festivity where they want as many people there as possible. It looks good for the TV cameras, but these spring meetings, you know, it's not a made-for-television event. They're not televised. There's no, I mean, Feinbaum does his show down there, but other than that, there's no TV folks there, and so it's really in so much as you can get quality time with SEC football coaches and athletic directors, it's really the best opportunity of the year. And for the most part, these are just scrum interview sessions happening in hotel hallways, and which sounds, you know, pretty mundane, I guess, but it's actually where the best quotes seem to fly around, as you alluded to.
So do you think that we will have a decision announced there about what the scheduling format will be going forward once Oklahoma and Texas join the league?
You know, I was thinking about this earlier today. I don't know if we will get a firm decision announced. I think we will learn more than we know now. I think we will start to get some more clarity because this is an event where you do have some information usually come out of it. You know, a couple of years ago, I think about when the SEC approved alcohol sales, they lowered the prohibition toward alcohol. That the spring meetings was where that was announced at. So, you know, maybe we get the full formal announcement. At the very least, I think we're going to see, you know, a little bit of a larger arrow pointing into a particular direction. And frankly, that's probably the thing I'm probably most interested in discussing down there with coaches and ADs and hearing conversation about. I get so exhausted by this NIL stuff. I mean, I know it's important. It's important to the landscape of college football, but we're now at the stage where, like, nobody's saying anything new. I mean, if you played a drinking game of take a shot anytime someone says wild, wild west, you'd be wasted by 1 o'clock. You know, it's like that phrase has worn itself out. I think the conversation of NIL has worn itself out. The NCAA, as of yet, has not made any move to actually enforce, you know, the rules, little rules that it does have. So it's like, let's talk about something else for a minute. And so, yeah, I am interested to see what shakes out of this. And I think fans are too, frankly. I know there's some fan frustration. Some fans are excited about NIL, whatever. But I think fan interest actually is a lot higher. And what's the conference going to look like in terms of divisions, pods, no divisions, pods, once Texas and Oklahoma get in?
I'm with you, man. Like the NIL stuff, and don't get me wrong, it's interesting, but there's so little new information out there right now, and it's just there's so much speculation, Blake, and everybody tries to look into their crystal ball. And I mean, this is sports radio, so we do, like, I'm not pointing fingers. I mean, that's what we do here. But you're trying to figure out, what is this sport going to look like 5 years from now, 10 years from now, 15 years from now? And it's just a fool's errand right now, Blake, because I don't think anybody knows.
Well, it is, and everybody's got their own motivations behind it, too. Yep. You know, I think some people put a lot of stock in what head coaches say, and that's fine. You can put your stock in wherever you want to put it in, I guess. But, you know, I'm not necessarily alarmed just because coaches don't like this. I mean, you know, why does college sports always have to do what the coaches want? You know, what's best for coaches? I mean, I've said before, probably in discussing this with you on the show, like, I think undeniably the changes in the NIL landscape and the combined with the transfer portal, undeniably that makes the job tougher for college coaches. I don't think there's any doubt about that. But when they're the people grumbling the loudest, does that mean their concerns should have the most merit? Or does that just mean they're the ones whose lives got harder because of this? And so they're grumbling the loudest. I mean, I don't hear the athletes complaining. And that's sort of the biggest joke about all this is you hear coaches and ADs say, you know, we're just looking out for what's out, what's best for the athletes. We want to make sure, you know, the athletes are not being duped here. Nobody's taking advantage of them. It's like, well, I don't hear any athletes, you know, expressing concerns over being paid. I don't hear any boosters expressing concerns over that they can blow their money on whatever they want now. And if that's paying college athletes or whatever, it's their money. They can do what they want with it. So I don't hear any boosters complaining. It's the coaches, and their lives are being affected, no doubt. It's harder to keep guys on rosters, and you have less control over your roster. I give credit to all that. That's true. But that doesn't mean that, from where I sit anyway, that we should listen to their complaints the most just because their lives were most affected, especially when they say, well, we're just looking out for the athletes. Like I said, the great irony in all this is the athletes are the ones not doing any complaining right now.
Yeah, Nick Saban starts talking about parity, and everybody's just looking at him like, is this dude for real? He's talking about parity right now? The guy's been dominating the sport for 20 years? But we visit with Blake Topmeyer this afternoon on the show. Blake, what do you think about Saban's comments, Kirby's opposition to NIL collectives? And not opposition, but they've certainly been critical of it publicly. And we hear from a lot of Tennessee fans and other fan bases, well, they just don't like other schools being able to get at some of the players that have, you know, always gone to those schools or at least have been going there lately. Do you think there's merit to that assessment of their position, or do you think that they are sincere when they talk about the need for reform and the quote-unquote good of the game?
Yeah, I think they're probably sincere maybe when they say that. I don't know that necessarily means they're right. I actually probably would say I'm not in either of those camps. Like, I don't know that Nick Saban's laying awake at night worried about, you know, Tennessee maybe getting a couple more quality recruits because of this. I really don't think that's what it is. And I think when you're a fan of a particular team, I think it's natural to think that everybody else in the sport's trying to hold you back and keep you down, and they're out there worried about you. But, I mean, come on. Like, you know, I don't think that's the way it is. I mean, by the same token, could Saban be worried about A&M or Ole Miss or whatever? No, I don't think so. Like, Alabama's still getting a ton of good players. They were in the national championship last year. They're probably going to be in the national championship this year, let's be honest. So I don't think that's it. I also don't think, like, you know, Kirby's comments about the good of the game and, you know, he's worried about fans becoming disinterested in the sports. I mean, you know, anytime a coach starts talking about how his main concerns with the fans, like, you've lost me. Like, I mean, come on. the coaches only worry about the fans when it's convenient for the coaches to worry about the fans. I think what this really comes down to is, really, since the beginning of time, college sports, the coaches have held all the power. They've been the most powerful figures in college sports. They've been, for many, many years now, the highest paid figures in college sports. Unlike the pros, where the power structure, you know, in professional sports more heavily favors the players, in college, the coaches have all the power. And what this does, what this transfer portal combined with the NIL landscape does, is it tilts some of that power away from the coaches. They don't have as much power to control their roster now. Boosters can have more influence over a team, I think, in this NIL landscape. And all of that erodes at coaches' power and authority. And whether you think that's good or bad, I guess, is a worthwhile debate. But I don't even think about it so much in terms of that. I just think, you know, when I hear these coaches talk about how this is bad for the game, this is bad for the sport, I keep coming back to, who it's really worse for is them, because it makes their lives harder and it eats away at their authority. And so I could see why they'd be upset by that. Doesn't mean that they're right and that these evolutions are wrong, but I could see why they'd be upset by it. But, you know, you look at professional sports and, you know, I really don't think coaches have as much authority in professional sports as they've ever had. In college, you got players who are earning big dollars. They're on contracts. You got the owners who have influence. You got general managers who have influence. It's not that way in college sports. In college sports, it's always been the head coach is the czar. They're more powerful than anybody else at the university a lot of times. A lot of times they're the highest paid public official in the state. And so, you know, they are the almighty. They're the galactic overlords. And some of that is being eaten away at a little bit, I think, by these evolutions.
I just think it's going to be a new skill set, right, that these coaches are going to have to learn. They're going to have to learn to manage this, because I do think when you look at professional sports, whether it's football or basketball, like basketball season now, the Lakers are a great example, right? I mean, that's a situation where obviously the head coach didn't have any control. It all fell apart on them. The teams that are still playing right now all have really good cultures, and, yeah, they've got stars that are making a lot more money than the coaches, but – there's like a respect factor. Like it works, right? And we've all seen that in the NFL where, you know, the Belichick, the teams that do well, the coach is always well respected by all the players. And the teams that fall apart into dysfunction and chaos, there's always like, you know, a player questioning the coach publicly or something like that. And we might see that in college for the first time now, Blake, where you have teams come apart at the seams publicly in a way that hasn't often been the case.
I think that's right. And I think, too, you know, one way to probably limit player movement a bit would be not so quick to fire your coach. I mean, college sports has gotten to the point now where, like, at the first sign a coach is struggling, boom, you fire him, and you either find a way to fire him for cause or you pay his buyout and on to the next one. I mean, Auburn, my goodness, they paid Gus Malzahn $21.5 million, despite the fact that he never had a losing record in eight seasons on the Plains, and they bring in Brian Harsin, and year one, he has a losing record, right? It's like, what did you pay the last guy $21.5 million to go away for? He never had a season that bad. But, you know, you're going to see player movement now regardless, right? I mean, even if you don't have coaching changes, there's going to be guys who are either A, unhappy with their playing time, unhappy with the situation, they're going to hop in the portal, or B, they might think they're going to get a better NIL deal out there. They think the grass is greener on the other side, so they test the waters that way. You're going to have some of that. But I do think, you know, the programs that deal with the most turnover, I think we see this, and I think we're going to see it even more going forward, are the ones that fire the coaches, or they lose several assistant coaches. And guys think, well, this isn't who I signed up to play for. I got a free transfer. I can be out of here. So, you know, for all the grumbling that you hear with coaches and administrators about the number of players transferring and how players now just want to go chase the money, well, A, coaches are chasing the money at a higher rate than ever. I mean, we just saw Lincoln Riley and Brian Kelly leave two really, really good jobs for greener pastures elsewhere. Brian Kelly, while his team at Notre Dame was still in the playoff hunt, leaves. So B, the players are just doing what the coaches are doing. And also, if you want to maybe tamp down on that player movement, maybe don't fire your coach. Maybe be a little more patient with your coach, because I think that's the fastest way to lose a swath of players. Yeah. Tennessee saw that, you know, just a year ago, even before there was the free transfer. And I'm not saying they were wrong to fire Jeremy Pruitt, but I'm saying that's a case in point of you're going to lose the most guys after you fire a coach. So maybe this will slow the roll on that just a bit.
Blake, switching gears here, some news locally with Tennessee as they get out of the BYU game next year to open the season. Now, I know you had a big piece on the last time something like this happened with Tennessee getting out of that Army game last year. Obviously, different circumstances here. Your thoughts on Tennessee replacing BYU with Virginia in Nashville to open up the 2023 season?
Well, my initial thought was, is Akron unavailable in 2023? were they already scheduled, or could Tennessee not get them on the line? But no, sarcasm aside, I don't think this is an apples to apples scenario. I still think canceling Army for all the reasons we've discussed previously was a poor decision, and I don't think very well thought through, and I don't think ducking Army is the right thing to do. On the other hand, I think canceling a road game at BYU and getting this neutral site game against Virginia, it's better. Your fans can get there more easily. Obviously, you can get to Nashville easier than you can get to Provo. Now, surprisingly, actually, I've heard from a ton of fans who are upset by this. Maybe they were planning on going to BYU, or maybe they just don't like the idea of canceling a harder opponent, which I think BYU on the road, unless Virginia gets Arch Manning, you know, I think BYU on the road is a tougher game than a neutral site game against Virginia. But I actually think in this case, it makes sense. I don't think it's the same as canceling Army in your home building on a day when the Medal of Honor winners were supposed to be there. This one to me is just straight up scheduling. I still don't love the idea of ducking more difficult games and getting out of them and you know, scheduling games that you think are easier to win. I don't love that idea, but I think in general this one makes a little bit more sense to me than canceling a game against West Point that was supposed to be played in the house that General Nealon built on a day that was supposed to be honoring American heroes and Medal of Honor winners.
What, just generally speaking, we'll let you run here in just a second, Blake. Playing in Nashville, you know, you played the Music City Bowl last year. Obviously, they've had a couple of matchups there. Is there big value in that if you're Tennessee? I know people talk about it being a recruiting win and chance to plant your flag, all that stuff, and it is easier for your fans to get there, obviously. Do you think there's a lot of backlash, I know, from some fans about these neutral site games, but if you're Tennessee, does it make sense to have a consistent presence in Nashville?
I don't think it helps in recruiting in the way that people talk about it. I think back in like 1994, it probably did. You know, you get Tennessee coming into Nashville, the local TV stations are coming out and interviewing the guys, and they're on the nightly news and, you know, the whole bit. I mean, now with social media, with, you know, you can access, you can watch any ball game of the year if you want to. I don't think it's as important to take your show on the road and play. And I would say the same thing with bowl games. Like, I don't know that Tennessee gets any real recruiting benefit from playing in the Music City Bowl versus playing in the Gator Bowl. I really don't. I think that narrative is way overblown. I think it was a narrative that at one point was applicable. Before games and information and social media made everything more accessible and you didn't necessarily need the team playing in your city. I do think when it comes to neutral site games, I think in this case it works because they didn't have to sacrifice a home game to play this neutral site game. You know, they got out of a road game and they got a neutral site game in return. I think that works. I've never been a fan of, you know, getting rid of the home and homes in favor of neutral site games. And I think we've heard ADs and coaches, you know, now turn on that too. Most ADs and coaches are favoring the home and homes versus the neutral site. But in this case, I think it's a way to get a game in Nashville without sacrificing a game in Knoxville. And I think you can position that as a scheduling win for Tennessee.
Hey, Blake, we appreciate your time as always. We'll let you get back to packing that suitcase with swim trunks and sunscreen for Destin. Enjoy that trip here in a couple of weeks.
Okay, sounds good. Thanks a lot.
Blake Topmeyer of USA Today. Of course, you can read his work oftentimes at knoxnews.com, the Knoxville News Sentinel. Some interesting conversation there surrounding college football. And if you want to chime in on anything you've heard, go ahead and take a shot now. We go open lines the rest of the way here this afternoon. 866-546-8200, your number to jump in this afternoon. We pause for the cause. Back with more right after this. Now, Sports Illustrated is desperate to sell the swimsuit issue now. I mean, is...
Oh, well, now, wait a minute. Who's on the cover?
Well, there's a couple. There's at least three that I know of, and I think they've been doing this for a while, where it's like different covers because, now, first of all, let's set up this conversation for a second. There was a time, and I'm 41, like the Sports Illustrated swimsuit issue holds a special place in my life, I would say. Just like, I mean.
Wow.
Yeah,
okay.
Like that was a momentous event for teenagers in the early in the 80s, early 90s, you get that Sports Illustrated swimsuit issue.
Oh, yeah.
And because I mean, this again, not to get too lewd or anything, pre-internet, like I know, Jake, your generation, Marcus, your generation, like is just used to
look
like
up anything
going. Yeah, you could see any depraved act you want at any time for free with anybody doing it.
Yeah, but that wasn't until high school.
Okay, like back in our day, we had to use this thing called our imagination, and like, quite frankly, a little bit nostalgic for those days at times. I mean, we've been oversexed as a society for a long time, and I don't know how much worse it can get at this point.
Never say that. Can always get worse.
But I'm sure, like my parents probably thought the swimsuit issue was like borderline pornography.
Oh yeah. I'm pretty sure mine got thrown away a time or two.
Yeah, certainly my grandparents' generation was probably just like, oh, my God. Like, I remember a couple ones stand out to me. Like, Tyra Banks was always really smoke show on the cover. I remember there was one year, there was like Kathy Ireland, Elle McPherson, and somebody else really famous were like.
Nikki
something?
That one, but then there was Cindy Crawford.
Was she on the cover?
Of swimsuit? SI?
Yeah.
I'm fairly certain.
I don't know. I feel like I would know that, Bear. You have to show me this. You have to show me the film.
I need to go look at the film.
But anyway, that was special. Now it's not special anymore. First of all, nobody buys magazines. And second of all, like the swimsuit issue, it was just a thing. It was just an excuse for dudes to look at hot chicks. And now, of course, dudes like don't need that anymore because they can look at anything they want on their phone. So nobody is buying the Sports Illustrated swimsuit issue. Honestly, I didn't even know it was a thing anymore.
I'll be honest, I forgot.
Yeah. Yeah.
Is that Cindy?
Does that ring a bell?
No, that must have been before my time. What year is that?
It doesn't say. It may be before your time, though.
But now this year they've got at least three covers that I know of. One is like I guess it's a plus size model.
Yeah.
And I don't like she's attractive. Like I thought she an attractive young lady. Yeah. I mean, it's not like back in the 90s you could only get on that thing if you were like just comically proportioned, like these chicks hadn't eaten a sandwich in like 10 years. They were all vegan, like super skinny, long-legged.
And this was back before, I think, I don't know, I guess they could touch up stuff.
Yeah.
But it wasn't like it is now with like Photoshop and like scientific stuff they do those pictures.
So people are like, you know, some people are like, look, this is not, like it's nice that we're being inclusive now. But this is the Sports Illustrated swimsuit issue. They should be like a stunningly hot girl, right? On the cover. So some people are having that conversation. The other one I saw, Elon Musk's mother, May Musk. What's wrong with you, dude?
Gotta warn me when you're gonna do that, man.
What's wrong with you, bro? Like, are you seriously like, what are you, 12 years old?
Yeah.
She's 74. 74 years old, dude. How old are you?
I'm just saying. It's like the EA Sports video games edition. You got the regular edition.
Have you
got
seen the gold edition.
I just looked up a picture, and I would not make that sound again. That was just for the joke. But anyway, it's like you have the regular edition, you have the gold edition, and the Legends edition.
So this is like Sports Illustrated swimsuit classic in your mind.
Yeah, pretty much.
All right. Hey, to each his own. Do we need 74-year-old women?
No.
On the cover of the Sports Illustrated swimsuit issue, who's buying that? Who is walking through an airport somewhere and seeing Elon Musk, 74-year-old mother on the cover, and say, you know what? I'd like to purchase that. I'd like to thumb through that. I want to see more of her, and that's a nice-looking woman. I want to see more pictures of Elon Musk's 74-year-old mother in a swimsuit. Jake Miller, that's who. You're the only one.
No.
And then the third one is Kim Kardashian. She's on there because I guess like guys just want to look at her huge, gigantic rear end.
I mean, far be it for me to – I very rarely see anything about somebody's mother. I'm seeing a picture of her looking like Cruella DeVille. Count me out.
Oh, Musk's mom?
Yeah.
What do you think about Kim Kardashian?
The all those people like that, the people that are famous just because of celebrity,
yeah.
Like I'd pay zero attention. I can't stand them.
Well, here's the thing though, is I feel the same way. Like I see her and I just see a dull, vapid, pointless person. Like and it like her personality is ugly to me. And I can't get past that. But you and I are older. When we were 12, we would probably just think like, oh, my God, like just, you know.
Oh, yeah, like, absolutely.
So I guess I get that. Like, that's what they're going for. But, I mean, even physically, I don't.
A 12-year-old male is usually the most volatile. I mean, it's like juggling
dynamite
at
that age. Yeah, there's no.
Everything's cranked up, your hormones.
It's 100% visual. There's nothing.
No.
It's just like you like what you like.
And just, you know, going the hormones and chemicals in your brain.
Completely uncontrolled reaction to it and has nothing to do with her.
They're barely civilized. Almost have a feral-like
quality. Oh, no, yeah.
You're feral.
Exactly what it is. It's totally feral.
Yeah.
Wild animals. Yeah. We are just
don't ever turn your back on
wild baboons in the jungle just throwing feces at that point.
Yeah, smear it at all of us. Yeah, idiots.
Have you seen this pile of crap?
And like now I look at her and I'm just like I said, first of all, I just think she is like, I don't know. I just don't like her physically. I mean, she just looks fake, but she's fake on the inside and the outside.
Yeah.
And
I've never watched 30 seconds of their show. I pay
fake
very
butts
little attention to them.
To me, or like, I'm not a fake boob guy too. Like I usually feel like I can tell just upon first glance, but like fake butts to me are so much worse than fake boobs. Like that doesn't.
Oh, they're terrible.
It looks awful.
Yeah. Be happy in your own skin, man.
And I like big butts too. I'm not fat shaming here. I like butts of all different shapes and sizes.
And
look at me
lie.
Like I'm. Huh?
And you cannot lie.
Thank you. Thank you, Marcus. Well played, sir. But, I mean, it looks unnatural. It doesn't look real. It looks gross, dude.
Yeah, I mean, it's nasty.
Are we up on the porch right now, Miller? I mean, are we?
No.
No, you're with us?
Yeah, I'm with you on that.
Younger generation, Marcus, Kim Kardashian's butt, not good?
I'm not a fan of hers. I've been waiting for the porch music this whole segment.
Really?
The way you guys have been talking about it.
You think
it.
So?
I mean, you said back in my day talking about how you would gain access.
That's true. Okay, yeah, it should have been going the whole time.
Probably. Here's the thing, though, man. Everything that's put into someone's body that's fake, it just doesn't look good. It doesn't matter if they're 21 years old, 50 years old, 70 years old. If it's fake, it just doesn't look good. You can tell that it's fake.
I don't know, but I can't go all the way there with you.
What do you like that's fake?
I don't like it, but, I mean,
fake boobs are sometimes an improvement.
Yeah. Not an improvement. And it's totally up to them. And you want to do that. I'd strongly recommend, like, I would have never recommended that to any girl I've been with or in a relationship with. Like, nah. I had one that wanted to get them done. I was like, nah. I'll do that. That's stupid.
Wouldn't see that in JCPenney's catalog back in the day.
JCPenney's? I never had JCPenney's. No, it was Sears. JCPenney's too?
Yeah, JCPenney's
is the first catalog.
So, yeah, Sports Illustrated swimsuit issue. Still a thing in 2022. Who knew?
Not as good as it used to be.
No. Few things are, Bear. Few things are.
Did you happen to catch the Peter Burns put out a tweet yesterday about the SEC?
The pictures?
Yeah.
Yeah, that was good.
I posted the Sterner fumble.
SEC Louvre pictures, pictures that you were going to hang in the Louvre?
Yeah.
Galdon double birds was.
There's a really good shot of our guy decapitating Jacquez. What was it? Gets in Florida. Green back in the day, Terry.
Who, Terry?
Yeah.
Really?
Oh, yeah.
I'll show me that. All right, stay with us. The Drive continues. Hour number three coming up.